O'Clock News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 20th of January, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Yes, as you notice, we've got a whole new crew here today. Jessica Sawyer is in for Rob Linton, who is enjoying himself somewhere off the coast of something on some sort of love boat. Through the love boat.
Off the coast of Drambuie.
What?
Off the coast of Drambuie.
Off the coast of Drambuie. And Dan Deary is, of course, in for Dave, who is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. We'll be, or maybe Robin. No, I don't think I want to go.
Don't go there.
I don't want to go there. All right, let's start with some news, shall we? Let's start with Dell. Dell Inc. has assured users of its laptops that there is no danger from electrical jolts sometimes received from the cases of some of its systems. Users have complained of receiving either a continuous electric tingling or sharp shocks from some Dell laptops. The Dell machines involved include the 9400 and more recently laptops with brushed aluminum cases, such as the XPS line. In a Knowledge Base article published on Wednesday, Dell acknowledged that, and I quote, "A tingling sensation may be noticed when connecting devices to Dell notebook computers or printers and touching exposed metal parts of devices being connected to the parent device." Unquote. But Dell denied that the tingling sensation is cause for alarm and said the surges will neither harm human beings nor do any damage to the computer, nor through inaction allow a computer to come to harm. The jolts reported by some users are due to an electrical potential or voltage between exposed metal parts of the laptop and the earth. According to Dell, this voltage can be found in any electrical device powered by an AC adapter without an earth. The voltage does not present any risk to the user. This happened much earlier in the year. People were noticing it. And late last year, a voltage test by one user showed that the surface of the XPS M1530 was giving off more than 100 volts of power. Users also said they could feel the voltage when connecting cables or accessories. If conditions are right for the human body to be more conductive, such as having wet hands or standing barefoot on a concrete floor, the probability of sensing the tingling increases, Dell said. It is recommended to unplug the AC adapter from the parent device before attaching any cables or accessories, as this reduces the possibility of experiencing the tingling sensation. Some users have complained of the tingles or shock and have been provided with a three-pronged, that is, an earth power adapter, which solves the problem. Dell has been shipping two-prong unearthed power adapters with the majority of its systems worldwide for more than a year and a half. Dell is considering creating a program to sell earth power adapters to users at a discounted price. Some users of non-Dell laptops, notably Apple Inc.'s aluminum-cased Mac laptops, have reported a similar tingling sensation, although Mac people originally thought it was simply a rapturous experience coming from touching something that Steve Jobs created. All right.
Nick, one way to get around that is sometimes you can just pull out your AC plug,
yeah,
turn it around, and stick it back in. You used to be able to do that in the days before plugs were polarized.
Right, they are now polarized.
Yeah.
But if you have older or worn out receptacles,
they will also work.
You can put them in backwards. And so, you're right, reversing them may fix the problem. Just reverse the polarity.
Reverse the polarity of the AC, which doesn't seem to make sense, but does work.
Yep. Yeah, so be very, very careful when plugging and unplugging things on clearly any computer with a brushed aluminum case. This computer looks like it's brushed aluminum, but it is, in fact, cheap, crappy plastic. Now, which model Dell do you have? Do you have the...
The 600M.
Oh, then you don't have the rapturous sensation.
This is crappy plastic also.
There you go. All right, go.
I've got a metal one. I have never had the problem. I've been static shocked by it a few times.
Oh, yeah, well, yes. That happens. Yes,
that and of course, it's the amperage, not the voltage, that kills you.
Right.
We had a nutty physics professor that used to hook the Van de Graaff generator up to the doorknob. And once he got it up to 200 or 300,000 volts, we'd call people into the room.
Yeah, right.
Just to watch them jump.
Yep.
So, well, and so of course, Tesla everyone thing. In the room has been hit by at least 100,000 volts.
Right. Right. And the reality is that's the way Tesla did it. You know, yep. he would spend days sitting under the Tesla coils. Massive voltage, millions of volts, and not a lot of amperage. Yep. And so, not a problem.
Amuse your friends.
Right. Shock your friends in other ways. All right. Our first caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hey, cute dittos, Nick.
Thanks.
I recently updated Mozilla, finally responding to the queues, and I discovered my favorites list disappeared. And I was wondering if they're gone forever or are there steps to restore that?
You updated, are you talking about Firefox or real Mozilla?
I'm sorry, the Firefox. I use Firefox on my system, and I responded to the reminders and finally updated it and discovered all my favorites.
How old was your previous version? Do you know how many versions you jumped? It should have copied your favorites over. What I'm thinking maybe is if you went from 1.0 to 2.0, it may not have.
No, I didn't. It wasn't that long ago that I did the last one. It happened the last time too, but my son brought it back to life for me, and I didn't know what he did. So,
well, there's a file called favorites.html.
In Mozilla, it actually makes a backup file, bookmarks.back.
Oh, bookmarks.
Right.
So
IE is favorites.html. Yeah.
What steps do I follow to get there?
First you need to find it.
Yeah, you can do a search. Make sure you're searching in all the hidden files and folders. But if you do a search for bookmarks.back, there might be a backup of that. And then if you rename that to...
And the full bookmark file is bookmarks.html.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you rename that to bookmarks.html, you should get your bookmarks back.
Do that while Firefox is not running.
Okay.
So
just do a regular search under the...
Under Windows.
Right, under Windows. Okay. Start search. Look for bookmarks.back. That's all lowercase.
Got it.
When you find it, rename it bookmarks.html. Start up Firefox, and it should immediately then copy bookmarks.html to bookmarks.back. But just to be on the safe side, go somewhere you don't have bookmark.
Mm-hmm.
Bookmark it.
Okay.
Immediately.
Thank you.
And if nothing else, that will create the back file.
And I've posted a link from the Mozilla magazine on how to recover your lost bookmarks.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have fun. All right. Our next caller, Bob from Irondequoit. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Morning, guys.
How are you?
You know, talking about those laptops. Don't you guys remember charging capacitors up and zapping your buddies with them and stuff?
Oh, heck yes. Yep. Hours of
Leiden,
fun.
Leiden jar. We ran the Van de Graaff on a Leiden jar for a week once.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, guys. Hey, I got a Dell computer, and I got a wired router I use with it. And then my son's got a laptop, wireless. My daughter got a laptop. So I joined the 21st century, and I got a new wireless router. But now when I do streaming audio, say I want to get a Buffalo radio station or listen to you on WHAM, it'll start to stream and I can listen to it, and then it starts to drop out. It'll drop out. Now, it didn't happen with the wired router. It just started once I had a wireless router connected up.
Does it also happen to the machines that are connected wired?
Yeah, in fact, I am connected wired to it. It's a D-Link, it's wireless and or wired, so I have an Ethernet connection direct to it off my computer. And then my kids use their laptops wireless. But I never had this problem when I had a Linksys wired router connected right up to it. Everything else is the same. The only thing I changed was it changed routers.
A wireless capable router, but you're still hardwired to it.
I'm still hardwired to it. I mean, is there a setting on the router?
Could be the MTU settings or?
Well, yeah.
Is there something streaming audio that means different settings or something? Or is there a problem with routers?
No, I also have a D-Link wireless router right out of the box, runs like a top.
Stream your own show to it or something? Or?
I stream 100 things to it. I stream all the time.
One thing you can check too is to make sure that you're getting your full bandwidth with that. There's tons of sites out there that you can check your bandwidth and make sure that you're getting full capable bandwidth with the router.
The first thing I might do is connect one of my machines directly into your cable modem or DSL modem and see if it happens there.
Okay. Yeah? Like I said, it worked okay with my old router.
Well, but, you know, coincidences happen all the time.
Okay.
Particularly in the computer world. And if it's still a problem, I would return it for a replacement.
You remember what model the thing is?
D-Link 1080 or something. Maybe that's my TV. I don't know. 1080.
yeah, 1080i or 1080p would be a television.
I'm finding lots of hits on the internet about the WBR 2310 D-Link router having this problem.
Excuse me, can you say that again?
The WBR 2310 D-Link router having this problem. A lot of people on the internet are reporting that.
Oh.
Most of the solutions are D-Link is crap and go to somebody else.
2310. I'll see if that's the model number and I'll check on it and stuff.
Yeah, it may just be time to get a different one. Like I said, okay. I have
maybe
a
that
and I
one
love it.
Isn't working.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I'll check it out. Thanks for your time.
All right, thank you. That's always a tough problem because it could be any one of a thousand things. And but he had it narrowed down already because he knew it was the router itself because he'd had the old router worked. So
in fact, if you still have the old router, plug that in and see what happens.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You can actually connect the two routers together if you want to. That's not hard to do, but it takes a little bit of work. But then, you know, the kids could be doing the one thing without streaming. They listen to too much music anyway. And you could be going the other way. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. Notice how they had to do that slower because I had, like, half the names are different today. Normally, I can just fall asleep while I call the roll, but this time I had to think about it. So give us a call. You know our numbers. We've got a line or two open there, I see. And so give us a call, and that'll be fun. We're going to bring you a lot more news, views, stuff you can use. We've got the poll, as always. Join us, of course, in the chat room, in the IRC chat. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And we're back with sound bites. The MacBook Air hit the world this week. Steve Jobs, in fact, wowed the Macworld audience when he unveiled the slim, ultra-portable MacBook Air notebook. But users and analysts say it lacks some of the important features that may make it unattractive to some buyers. It's an ultra-portable notebook launched at the conference and expo on Tuesday. It has a 13.3-inch widescreen display and a full-size backlit keyboard. It uses a 1.8-inch hard drive, also found in the iPod, and a smaller version of Intel's Core 2 Duo processor. Apple has also developed a program called Remote Disk, with which users can download software from the optical drive of a nearby computer while using built-in 802.11n wireless networking. At 3 pounds, Jobs called it the lightest and thinnest notebook on the planet. For all its impressive features, it does not seem to meet the needs of some of Apple's traditional multimedia audience, who were very vocal in talking about it. See, it's not enough that Steve Jobs brings out a new notebook. It has to be a new notebook specifically for them. Things that were missing, for example,
Apple's stock price went down after the announcement.
Wow.
Which everyone has been clamoring for a very small, very light, ultra-portable laptop. He gives it to us, and their price goes down. Because it wasn't what I wanted.
Well, exactly right. Yeah. It doesn't have a FireWire port, which multimedia people need. This may not be your laptop if you're a high-end multimedia user. I'm just saying. And, of course, Apple has led the pretty much the only system that automatically comes with FireWire. It only has one USB port because Mac people have not discovered USB hubs, apparently. They're very upset about that. Not a lot of storage capacity. I got to say, the hard drive is only 4,200 RPM, so it is a very slow drive. But the point is not, can you do everything with it? Is it, do you now have a portable Mac to carry around with you that's easy to carry?
And will it do your job?
Exactly. Again, if you're the sort of person, now we have actually several people who are videographers and do things like that, and they make movies. This is clearly not the machine for them.
But and the rest of your video equipment is going to weigh a lot more than the laptop.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, right. At that point, if you're carrying a MacBook Pro and, you know, that's who cares. But if what you want is a machine to just take around and do some work, I've got a couple of friends who are programmers who cannot wait to get their hands on this machine. because they're writing code, they're uploading it to a web server, and they get to work all day with this very light, very nice little machine.
Yeah, it's not the product for everyone, but right. It's a great product for some of the customers. And hey, what product is for everyone?
None.
But the exactly. technology is phenomenal in it, and it will have a trickle-down effect to the rest of the product line, I'm sure.
Right. And the problem is that Apple has billed itself as the multimedia platform. There's not a lot of storage space on this for movies and pictures and sound files. It's still kind of pricey for the low end of the market. So it's kind of a duck out of water from what people were expecting. Now, once it's been on the market for a while and somebody says, you know, this would be the perfect application for the Air.
Sure.
Then it'll go somewhere. But it's not, you know, everybody expects, what they expected was a MacBook Pro for $400 and the size of your thumb. That's what they wanted.
But it'll never happen.
And that'll never happen. And the world is simply not going to work that way.
Right.
But what was kind of cute is he introduces it in a manila envelope.
Yeah.
So now there's two or three companies making or announcing manila envelope cases for it.
Of course.
Some of them have a little padding in them, and they're more than just a manila envelope. But
the problem is it's a niche machine. It still shocks me that Apple is...
Well, and that's been the argument all along why Apple hasn't made this computer before, is it's such a small niche that is there any money in selling 200 or 300 a week?
On the other hand, for somebody like me who just needs a laptop to take to meetings, take notes, maybe get on the web, do stuff like that, I'm in meetings all day as a work machine to carry around. What a lovely little product.
Yes, yeah, somebody that likes to upgrade too, it's not for them because the case is completely closed. You can't even right. change the battery or upgrade the hard drive or anything like that.
Right.
It's probably, not going to be anyone's only computer, but it's certainly a nice adjunct to a workstation at home.
Exactly. All right. And of course, you know, you can always just run Linux on it, and then it'll be twice the power.
One interesting option is, it's already running BSD, so you don't
need to. Right, exactly.
Just take off the GUI if you want. One interesting option they do have available is a 64-gigabyte solid-state drive. It's a $1,000 option. This year. But it's really, really fast. Yeah. You know, it can boot in almost zero time, saving files in almost zero time. It's one of the first mainstream computers that has the option of a solid-state drive.
Yeah. And that idea, by the way, I love.
Yep. And it increases the battery life because there's no moving parts to drain the battery. So that's a nice option.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Jessica, we've got plenty of time for calls, don't we? Yes, we do. Thank you. All right, our first call, holy mother of pearl. It's Tony from Baltimore, Maryland. Tony!
Captain Video.
How are we, my friend?
We are better than you can possibly imagine.
And I can imagine pretty doggone good.
Yeah. I just called in to express some opinions and
please
give some ideas. I like the idea, and you know, we've been going on for years and years about this, about Firefox. One mm-hmm. thing, and really, you know, why run IE is down to it. One of the things, though, that I don't know if we preach often enough is some of the extensions that Firefox has that not only improve the browsing experience, but really work on your safety and security. And I always been a fan of AdBlock Plus.
Oh, I love AdBlock Plus.
Yeah, it has come to my attention, especially with this latest JavaScript iframe hack that's been going around. Mm-hmm. No script. I mean, that is the first thing.
Yep.
To the point where we, at work, we put them on our kiosk computers.
Right.
Down here, and no script. It's a pain in the butt, because every place you go to at first, you know, you get all these, do you want to allow it this time globally, et cetera, things like that. But with that latest cPanel, which is a control panel for a lot of these co-located, co-hosted web servers that are running Linux,
right.
there's a huge hole in there, and it hasn't been patched yet. And malicious JavaScript gets embedded in an iframe, and it redirects. The problem is each redirect is a one-off.
Yep.
So the AV companies can't put out a DAT file that catches it all the time. So that's,
right.
You know, that's your belt and suspenders.
What Tony is talking about, for those of you who aren't familiar with Firefox, is you can add things to Firefox with the extension manager. And what that allows you to do is to add pieces and parts that the system generally It's called add-ons, and it's under tools. And so you can add all kinds of things. Some of them are frivolous. The Abe Vigoda add-on.
Yeah.
It's just a little thing that sits in your bar at the bottom and tells you whether or not Abe Vigoda is alive or dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and others, and, you know, are, go ahead.
The weather, you know, Weather Fox and all
right,
those things.
Right.
They're handy. They're nice.
But some of them are truly, truly essential, like AdBlock, which lets you block ads or things that are pretending to be ads that are bad. So that's it's a real nice product.
Yeah, and NoScript, I think, is essential. That's not even optional. The web address is addons.mozilla.org.
Right.
The other comment I wanted to make is we talk about firewalls and hardware firewalls and routers and things like that. One thing that I would recommend for a moderately savvy computer user is go find yourself an old PC. It doesn't have to be anything. For example, I'm running this on a P133 with 32 megs of RAM.
Yep.
Either download and burn to an ISO, IPCOP, or Smoothwall from smoothwall.org. It has one of the most featureful firewall setups that you could possibly imagine, including the ability to hook in the Dan's Guardian features for controlling
yep.
what websites you could get to, embedded antivirus, and oh, by the way, it'll check your email.
Yep.
And you can offload some of that stuff from your own PC.
Right, giving you more of your own power back.
Yeah, and it can also control who goes where and when out on the internet.
Yep, yep, yep. Speaking of extensions, have you seen the OpenOffice.org extensions? Of course you have. You can add things to OpenOffice is an office suite. It's got a word processor and a spreadsheet and a presentation package and a database. And there are now extensions that will, for example, allow you to retrieve, work on, and save Google Docs mm-hmm. right from OpenOffice.
Yeah, I've seen that. And I think, speaking of OpenOffice, one of the most interesting things potentially that I've seen occurred this week, I'm assuming you know that Sun Microsystems bought MySQL.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a hold of somebody to bring on the show.
I'll see what I can do.
Thanks.
I work with those guys. I think with doing that, you now have the complete Microsoft Office killer. Because OpenOffice did not really have a good, solid database background. Not saying that Access is a good, solid database. But with MySQL hooks into OpenOffice and controlled by Sun, this is going to take off.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually some of the extra things that you can do. There's an OpenOffice blogger, and there's the Sun. Sun's already got a couple of tools that give you report writers and things like that in OpenOffice that are better than the built-in ones.
Yeah. And you know what? If you buy Star Office from Sun, which is what, $75 now
yeah.
for the complete suite, you get all the extra fonts, all the templates, all the graphics, the things that you're used to.
Yep. For $75, it's a great, great thing.
A lot better than $400 for Microsoft Office.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you get the support and everything else that you want. You know, you can go free or you can pay the $75 and get it all. Tony, thank you so much.
You're welcome,
We have to take a break. Always a joy to see you. We need to talk. I need to come and visit. You need to come and visit, whatever it takes. Gotta go. We're going to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We've got one or two lines open, so if you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not on the line. Go to the homepage and join us in the chat room. When we come back, we'll also talk a little bit about the new official repository for some wonderful things, all about sound bites. And, of course, we'll have more of everything that you look for, the news, views, stuff you can use, all the important things that you listen to sound bites for, back in just a couple of minutes in the greatest computer show in the known universe. You know what that is. Say it with me out there in Radio Land. It's Sound Bites, only and always on 1180 WHAM, right here in glorious, warm, and sunny Rochester, New York. Where? What? Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jess Sawyer.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. While a proof-of-concept exploit against the year's first Windows vulnerability has security researchers ringing alarm bells, proof-of-concept code for the TCP/IP flaw spelled out January 8th in Microsoft's MS-08-001 security bulletin was added to Immunity Inc.'s Canvas penetration testing software on Wednesday. Basically, the deal is Microsoft makes triggering the issue sound a bit harder than it actually is. They rated the bulletin critical, but said there are a number of factors that make exploitation difficult and unlikely in real-world conditions. However, it appears that researchers are able to make it work reliably every single time. So if you have not yet pulled in the January updates, please, please do so. It's critical on both Windows XP Service Pack 2 and Windows Vista. They patched the bug nearly 2 weeks ago. Symantec urged users on Friday to deploy the fix as soon as possible. This is huge. The proof of concept code proves that it is 100% reliable and astonishingly easy to make happen. So if you have not done this particular update, do it today. All right. Our next caller is Sue from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Sue. What's your question?
Hi. I have Adaware SE, the 1.06 personal. In the last 2 weeks, I've attempted to update it, but it says there are no updates. And I've never had that experience. Usually every week there is an update. So I'm wondering if there's something wrong with my Adaware or whether it actually doesn't have any updates.
Well, one thing you can do is they did come out with Adaware 2007, which is the upgrade to Adaware SE.
That may be your problem. They may have stopped releasing updates for the old versions of Adaware, and one of the updates that came along would have said you should download the new version.
Oh, okay. Now, I have the free version, so how do I go about going back then and trying to update?
You don't update the old version. You would uninstall the old version, go to the LavaSoft website, and download the new version,
and then
the new version will allow you to update again.
Oh, okay. So, and I'll still be able to get it free. I just go to that Lava site.
Right. They have a free version, and they have a commercial version as well.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Sue. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Our next caller is Reed from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Reed. What's your question?
Hello, and thank you for the show. Your wealth of information.
Thank you. Clearly, you haven't tried any of the things we suggested.
Several weeks ago, you were discussing the Super Spyware program, and just sort of threw out the question, anybody had any experience?
Yep.
So I did. I downloaded that program and upgraded SpyBot and Adaware and ran the Super Spyware first, and it didn't discover anything. Then I ran SpyBot, and it got like 8 programs, like Hitbox, Burst Media, DoubleClick. Then ran Adaware, and there were no threats. So I just thought I'd let you know about that, and also wanted to say thank you for the information on that device, Tornado. That is magnificent little piece of equipment.
Isn't it great?
It is. It's truly plug and play.
Yep. Plug in both ends and you're running.
So thank you so very much, and keep up the good work.
They did just release. Reed. They did just release a Mac Windows cross-platform version, too.
Right. The Tornado, for those of you who didn't hear, is just a little device that you plug into 2 separate laptops, and it lets you transfer everything from one to the other. You guys have been
using
the
USB.
Shop. Yep.
Plug it right into the USB. It comes up with the menu. It shows up this computer, other computer, and makes it real easy.
Yep. Fantastic.
Thanks, Reed.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
And for our previous caller, I just checked the last Adaware update for Adaware SE was January 14th. So that was a week ago. She said 2 weeks ago, and she hasn't been able to get updates, but it's uninstalling and reinstalling will probably fix it.
Right. Go to the newest version. You should be fine. Our next caller is Tom from Greece, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I have a question. I'm trying to unload some programs from my primary drive. I have an old computer. Actually, my son has it. I have a 10 gig primary and a 100 gig secondary. And I was looking at his primary hard drive. And as I mentioned, it's 10 gig, and all I got left is 4 meg.
Yeah.
So I tried to unload some programs using the control panel and add and remove programs, and I get this message saying that I can't unload anything because it's being used by another program. My question is, how do I get around that?
Well, there's a couple of things. First, make sure that you've emptied your trash. And make sure that you've emptied your temp files. Now, they're available in 2 places. Right on the C drive in a file called TEMP, in a folder called TEMP, and or a file called TMP. Some versions of Windows used one, some versions used the other. They've now pretty much standardized on TEMP, but check to see. And then in the Windows folder, there may be a folder also called temp or TEMP, and make sure that both of those are empty. Now, when you go to empty those, you may find one or two programs where it stops the process and says, no, I can't delete this program. But then you select all the other programs and delete them. The problem is that sometimes there will be open files there.
That's like Norton Utilities. If you try to remove the Live Update Manager, it won't until you remove the Norton antivirus first.
Right.
Sometimes you know, you have to remove something before you can remove something else related to it.
Right. You can also, and I don't remember how to do this off the top of my head, so I'm stealing Dan's system here. You can also move your swap file from the C drive over to your D drive, where you've clearly got a whole lot more space. Now, of course, I have to remember how to do that. I think it's actually under computer, isn't it?
It's under system in the control panel.
Oh, there we go. Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Go under system and then advanced.
Yes, indeed.
It's called swap file?
Yeah,
yes. It's, what happens is this. You go to the control panel, open up systems, go to performance, go to advanced, and at the bottom is something called virtual memory.
Yep.
And you hit the change button, and you can change the drive that it's on, and you can change the size. I don't think the size is going to be a problem, but you'll want to change the drive that it's on.
Okay. So you're thinking the problem is I've just used up all my space and I need to get rid of some of those programs either by deleting through the temp or move the swap file over to my D
drive.
Well, the swap file will clear some space on your C drive. The problem may be you don't have enough free space on C for the uninstall temporary file,
right.
So it can't uninstall anything.
Right, these are three separate things. The swap file is one thing, the temp files are something else, and then all the programs you've got installed are a third thing.
Yeah.
And then once you do all those things, try uninstalling again, and it may do it.
Okay, great.
Right, right. And then you'll have some free space, and some things you'll be able to uninstall, and some you won't, but some things are just not uninstallable. They just aren't, because Windows needs them all the time. But most things are, particularly programs you've added, particularly, for example, if they are games or whatever. And if you've got the original disks, you can then turn around and reinstall them and say, no, no, install onto D. And in fact, you can also do that with anything else you want to install. We need to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jess Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 49 minutes after the hour, and we'll be right back. Give us a call. We'll be right back with the greatest computer show in the known universe. Once again, you know what show that is. And don't forget, join us in the... I have enough time to tell you to join us in the chat room. There's only 18 of us in there right now. Soundbites, 1180. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jeff Sawyer.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Yes, indeed. And by the sound of that music, you know it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Speak before we get... Well, we don't have Uncle Dave with us. Everybody's got their own idea of a rant. But before we go there, I have to talk about the newest member of the Soundbites family. It's listed on the main Soundbites webpage, but in case you didn't get to it, Srekus, who's one of the folks in the forum and everywhere else, a loyal Soundbites fan, has created the official Uncle Dave Story Hour site at UDSH, that's Uncle Dave Story Hour, UDSH.net. And he's got 45 of them. Listed already. 3 hours, 16 minutes, and 2 seconds of the Uncle Dave Story Hour, which is really, I think, something they're using at Gitmo right now. I'm pretty sure that's what that's for.
Well, I love the one-line summaries that he's come up with.
Yeah.
Davis porked off. Back up your data. October 28th, 2007. It reminds me of those Chuck Norris facts.
Yeah, right. This, and so far, my favorite is number 13. I didn't recommend that program. I never even heard of it. Don't be scammed by purchasing phony PC scanners. So that's Uncle Dave normally rants at this time, but Uncle Dave is not around. So we have a couple of other rants we'd like to get to. I want to start with and I will not mention his name, but one of my people came to me, one of the people at my job came to me with a laptop that needed fixing, and there, taped to the keyboard, was his username and password, which I immediately ripped off and threw away. Then he was angry because he didn't know his password, which I actually didn't throw it away. I saved it. But, you know, and I told him, I said, that's completely unacceptable to me. This was a faculty member. I will not mention his or her name. But our faculty, and I will call him his, so because that's the generic English term. Our faculty are world class, and this person in particular is definitely world class, but in their fields. And
just because you're bright doesn't mean you're smart.
Well, yeah. But this person's field is not computers, so I understand not being able to get a lot of things. But this person keeps in, well, I'll say his head, hundreds of thousands of important facts all day long, spews them forth at the whether or not you've dropped your hat, and can't remember one password? I don't think so. I think it's just a matter of hasn't bothered to memorize one or pick one that's easily memorizable. And that's not my problem. My problem is I've got to keep these machines safe. So we had a long discussion about that the other day, and this person took it very, very well, I have to say.
I see that all the time, too, in businesses and stuff. You go in, and they got their username and passwords taped right to the monitor of their desktop computer.
Why do you bother to have a username and password?
Right next to the memo from security saying, keep your desk clean, keep your password locked. Yeah.
Well, I have worked in places where if you did that, you would be fired. Simply fired. So then they do the next best thing. They put it on a post-it, open their bottom drawer, and stick it to the inside wall next to their leg.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like nobody would look there. You know, that's who would look there? Everybody.
Bottom of the keyboard, at least, is out, because everyone knows bottom of the keyboard.
Right. The best thing to do is to pick one that you can memorize. And I've said this 100,000 times before. It used to be, I would say, pick two words and stick a number in the middle. Happy 34 Monkey is Steve's favorite of all the ones I've come up with. But what I tell people to do is pick a phrase from somewhere. Like, and I don't use this as one of my passwords, so don't worry about it. The first line of The Cremation of Sam McGee by Robert W. Service. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. That's actually the first two lines. You take the first letter of each of those, capitalize all the T's, make the four a number four, make the I's all ones, and now you have a nice long password that's very tough to crack and yet very easy to remember if you know the poem. So pick a poem or a sentence or a saying or whatever that is familiar to you. Put a couple of rules in there so you've got some caps and some numbers, and you're done. And every time you look at your machine, all you have to do is think in your head that poem or that saying or whatever, and you've got your password. It's hard to break because it's not a name. It's not a number like your birthday or any of the stuff that everybody knows about everybody and that they're always able to break into machines with on their on television. And you would have it then much better off. So my suggestion is you definitely need to think about your password. But what you need to think about is how to make it easy for you and hard for everybody else. And that's my Uncle Dave rant. I'm sorry, I took the whole rant time, didn't I? I apologize. I took the whole rant time. I feel bad now. All right, we're pretty much done with that. And you guys must see it all the time.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, stuff just like that. That, you know, easy passwords too, like two letters and stuff.
Yeah, right. We had one person who insisted their password be years ago. I worked in a place I won't mention, and a very senior person wanted the password to be the letter A. I said, that would be like the very first thing people would try if it was an auto.
Well, it's
auto
so box. Simple, no one would try it.
Well, that's right. She said, all right, how about making it Z? I said, no, you don't. You haven't quite got the spirit of this. But that's the way it works, and that's the way it happens sometimes. I don't know what else to say because
we're out of
you
time.
Just gotta be careful. Well, we're out of time, but you just got to be more careful. And there's it's Leave It to Beaver. How many people actually recognize that as? Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jeff Sawyer.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Well, all right, 7 minutes after the hour. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll I have to find it. I'm so far behind in everything I'm doing today. Oh, yes. Is your main Windows system fully patched? We talked about people not having patched for a year and a half. Again, we have the same problem this week with a vulnerability on an unpatched system. 334 of you voted, tying for number 113 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. The winner in the poll was absolutely 51% of you lie. I mean, said absolutely. 18% of you were honest and said, I have no idea. 13% said Linux people chuckle. Wow, Linux people chuckle avuncularly. Apparently, that's a lot easier to type than it is to say. 10% of you said nope, and only 26 of you said Mac people chuckle smugly. Thanks to each and every one of you who voted. This week's poll is about an interesting story online. Two-thirds of parents say that they are uncomfortable with their children participating in online communities, and roughly half of them say that online predators are a threat, according to a new study from the Center for the Digital Future at the USC Annenberg School for Communication. The group has conducted an annual review of the effect of web technology on America since 2000, interviewing the same 2,000-plus people around the country. But this was the first year it asked about perception of predators and social sites. Jeffrey Cole, director of the center, that said that despite these concerns, parents' opinions about the web are generally positive. After 7 years of tracking the impact of the Internet, we are also seeing evolving trends, which show that adults view some aspects of going online by children to be as troubling as their use of other media or even potentially dangerous. The upside for most parents, 80%, is that they consider the Internet a valuable source of information and more important than television, radio, newspapers, and books. According to the study, that figure is up 66% from 2006. Other findings include a pair quarter of parents said their kids spend too much time online, a percentage that's risen for 3 years in a row. 13% said their children are spending less time with friends as a result of the Internet, another figure that grew for the third consecutive year. Many adults age 17 and older report being avid members of community sites. About 54% of those surveyed said they log into their community at least once a day, and 71% said that their social membership was extremely important. So this week's poll, do you worry about online predators? And the choices are yes, mostly for myself. Yes, mostly for my kids. Nah, commando, baby. And if it bleeds, we can kill it. That's a, never mind. That's a ref. Predator. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Predator. If it bleeds, we can kill it. And that's all. So far. Okay. If I have to explain the references, they're not good references. However, so far at 102 votes, 48% of you said, if it bleeds, we can kill it. Although nobody's commented on the fact that it came from Predator. So please feel free to vote in our poll. It's soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. During the show, you will also see that you can log in and join us in the Soundbites chat room. There's a link to the archives. There's a link to the official Uncle Dave Story Hour site. Thanks to Srekus. Once you have voted, by the way, check out that little yellow box. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you? Oh, well right. Done. Yay. Well done, Jess. Where you can leave an opinion and also check out what I do there. I send out a newsletter 3 times a week. If you're a member, you can get in on the forums. You can search the old newsletters. I do questions and answers and tips and tricks and rants and raves and question of the week and websites and all kinds of stuff. So you can, if you're a member, you can search through all of those to find the answers to your questions. Only $15 a year. I can't imagine why you don't do it. Oh, one of the things that we have been doing in the Ask Nick forum, which I just pulled over into the Soundbites forum under What the Soundbites Crew Got Wrong Again, is the Soundbites anniversary. We're merely a year and a half away from our 20th anniversary, which is not a long time. So Iron Wire and several others of us have been toying around with some ideas, and I pulled them all over into the Soundbites forum so that we would then be able to decide what we want to do. The idea is, Iron Wire's original idea was create a CD that boots into Linux and runs all the Tango stuff from the CD. So you don't have to reboot into safe mode. You don't have to run it individually from every user because the whole drive will be open to you. and that will work on NTFS partitions as well. You simply, the only one it wouldn't work on is encrypted file system. And then while you're there, you could play around in Linux. The other thing I found was, and God knows we cannot afford them unless we get an insanely generous sponsor, is a little horribly inexpensive and probably very cheap little MP3 player thumb drive. They essentially have the scroll wheel from the iPod on them. Essentially looks like that. But it's no bigger than a USB thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
And it has like 64 meg, 128 meg, up to a couple of gig. And it would be cool to make that a bootable thumb drive that had all this stuff on it, and B, load up some shows on it, give it away, put our name on it. You know, it'd be logoed item. That would be kind of cool. Yeah. That's very expensive, and it ain't going to happen. But that was just one of the things we threw around. So join us in the Soundbites forum to talk about that and give us your advice, maybe even encouragement. You never know. So join us there. Join us in the forums. Join us. Just join us all the heck over the place. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, I have new glasses, and I can't get used to which way I'm supposed to look through them at the moment. Vince from Rochester. Welcome, Vince. What's your question?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, you've got a great program. I don't know that much about computers,
thank
but
you.
I'm learning, you know?
That's how it works.
I had my brother sit down at my laptop. Basically, I got the desktop at home, and I've got a laptop with a wireless modem where I could print and do things in different parts of the house. He was doing his resume on, I think, Microsoft Word and Works.
Right.
And he went to save it, or something happened, and then afterwards, no, I cannot print from this computer anymore. I did do these things here. I went to the HP desktop where it says printers and faxes. I went to that. I tried to go into properties. When I went to properties, it says print properties cannot be displayed. The printer spooler service is not running. What does that mean?
What that means is this. When you go to print something, because Windows is a multitasking operating system that really only does one thing at a time.
Huh?
When they say they're multitasking, mostly what they mean is everything happens in little slices.
Okay.
If you were to print directly to your printer, it would pretty much stop everything until the printer was done.
Okay.
What happens is it takes that print job and saves it to a disk file called the print spooler.
Okay.
It's called spooling the print job to the disk. And then in the background, it shoots off little chunks from the spooler to the printer until the job is printed.
Okay.
Your job prints a little slower, but you hardly notice that anyway, since printers are so much slower than computers, and you get your computer back to work.
Okay.
Right? That print spooler has clearly shut down for some reason. And I don't think I actually know what that reason would be off the top of my head. But there are a lot of things you can check.
The Windows print spooler is really flaky.
Yeah, it really
is.
Yeah.
One thing that might get it back up and going is reinstalling the drivers for the printer. If that doesn't, what you can do too is check in the control panel under administrative tools. There's a button in there called services, and you can actually see if the print spooler is running or if it's disabled. And you can right-click on it and start it if it stopped, and that could get you back up and running, too.
Or at least give you a better error message about why the print spooler won't run.
Yeah.
Right. Now, when I try to print something off of dplanner, which is a decompression planner for Deep Scuba, it says external exception, then a number E06D7363. When I try to print something, that comes up.
That's probably the program's error message.
Yeah, that's in the program, not in Windows. But here's one thing you can try. Go into a command prompt. Start run CMD, enter.
Run.
Click the start button, select run, type in CMD, which is short for command,
okay,
and hit enter. Then type the following, net stop spooler, hit enter. Then type net start spooler, hit enter, and see if that worked. Okie doke?
Okay, I'll give that a try. Now, the other one the other said was about administrating. How do I get to that?
That's in the control panel. If you just open up the control panel, there's administrative tools in there.
Okay. All right, guys, I'll give that a shot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good night.
You too. Our next caller is Patty from Henrietta. Welcome, Patty. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Very, very good. Thanks for taking my call. I have had a dilemma for over a year now with my iPod.
Uh-oh.
We actually have two of them. And just like the last caller, I'm not a computer genius by any stretch. Barely knew how to use the iPod. Went over to my girlfriend's house. She was nice enough to help us get started by loading some songs onto it.
Okay.
She has an Apple.
Right.
And then when we came home, neither one of them worked in our computer anymore. And someone said, once you put it in an Apple, it reformats it.
Right. And then it will only work on that Apple. You need to reformat it back for your Windows computer.
Right. So, being the computer genius that I am, I went into Apple.com and tried to figure out how to do that, and I could not.
Don't you do that in iTunes?
You do it in iTunes, yeah. You launch iTunes, you plug the iPod in, and it will say, do you want to use the iPod on this computer? And you say yes.
It never did that. When I plug it in, it doesn't even appear to recognize. So the first thing I did was click on iPod Updater, and it would say iPod Service Error. And then it would say, restore completely erases your iPod and applies factory settings. Your music and other data will be erased.
Right. That's what you want to run.
Okay, I'm at that screen, and I was afraid to do it, but that sounded like it. And I've never found that until I was on hold with you guys just now, to be honest with you. The other thing that seemed to happen, something happened with QuickTime. I would always get a window up that said there was some type of QuickTime error. So again, while I was on hold with you, I found something I had never found before where it enabled me to load a new version, and I finally got to a screen that said, congratulations, QuickTime 7. So I'm thinking that was successful.
There you go.
That's the guru proximity factor.
GPS.
Just over the phone, we've been able to fix your problem.
I'm telling you.
This is why we put people on hold, so yep. They solve their problems before we get to them.
Well, a new version of QuickTime came out this week. In fact, a new version of iTunes and the new version of QuickTime just came out this week.
Yep.
That support the video rentals. That's the other big feature that they announced. You can now rent movies on iTunes.
Assuming you've got any sort of video capability in your iPod, or you're willing to chain yourself.
Well, no, it's your computer, your Apple TV, your iPod. It's a lot of different devices.
Oh, you guys are going to tell me I'm out of time, aren't you?
Yeah, very quickly you're out of time. If you got something you can talk about very fast.
It just says the new version is available, and then it says iTunes is not your default player. Would you like it to be? And then it will say an error has occurred. You do not have enough access privileges, but I'm the main...
Try downloading it and installing it rather than doing the actual update from iTunes.
Download
go to Apple's.
It.
You would go to Apple's website and download iTunes directly, rather than the update from within iTunes.
All right, Should I just click on OK then to restore?
And this, sure. This point will be QuickTime.
Yep.
Yes.
And that will convert me back to Windows.
That should, not a problem.
All right. Guys.
We got to take a break.
See you next week.
Thank you. Yeah, right. Or you can get in on the forums and post your question there.
Yeah, I wrote that down. Nick.com.
No, well, that's my forums, but the soundbites.org website, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, has its own set of forums, and you can post your question there. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole bunch of people on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jess Sawyer.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Hey, guess what? The CIA. Criminals have also have been able to hack into computer systems via the internet and cover power to several cities, according to a CIA analyst this week. Speaking at a conference of security professionals on Wednesday, CIA analyst Tom Donahue, now he's going to have to come and kill me, disclosed the recently declassified attacks, which offered few specifics on what actually went wrong. Criminals have launched online attacks that disrupted power equipment in several regions outside of the U.S., he said. Without identifying the countries affected, the goal of the attacks was extortion. We have information from multiple regions outside the U.S. of cyber intrusions into utilities, followed by extortion demands, he said. In at least one case, the disruption caused a power outage affecting multiple cities. We do not know who executed these attacks or why, but all involved intrusions through the internet. One conference attendee said the disclosure came as news to many of the government and industry security professionals in attendance. It appears that there were a lot of people who didn't know this already, said the attendee, who asked not to be identified because he is not authorized to speak to the press. Hacking the power grid made front page headlines in September when CNN aired a video showing an Idaho National Laboratory demonstration of a software attack on the computer system used to control a power generator. In the demonstration, the smoking generator was rendered inoperable. The U.S. is taking steps to lock down the computers that manage its power systems, however. On Thursday, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, No comment. Approved new mandatory standards designed to improve cyber security. So now, in addition to everybody stealing your identity, they're going to do it and then shut down your power grid. Great.
Well, it'll be more difficult if they would take the passwords off of the bottoms of their keyboards.
Yeah.
And out of the drawers next to their right leg.
Exactly. Exactly.
I use my left leg.
Yeah, see, that's you're so much safer than the rest of us. All right, our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Got a quick and easy question for you guys.
Yeah, the questions are always quick and easy, Bob. It's the answers that take forever.
Oh, this answer will be real quick.
Oh, good.
The free versions of SpyBot, Adware, and Super Spyware, I think is what it's called, are all three of those ready to run now in Vista, or are they still all XP?
Adware and SpyBot are able to work in Windows Vista, the 32-bit version. Super anti-spyware is...
Quick, we're looking.
Yeah. I will say that I have been using Avast as the antivirus program on my Vista box for about 6 months, and it works great.
Supposedly, the super anti-spyware will, too.
There you go.
That one I haven't tested, but...
Okay, so Avast on Vista works?
Avast, yeah, absolutely. Now, this is Vista 32-bit. I have not tried 64-bit.
All right. So SpyBot and Adware works on 32-bit Vista now.
Yepper.
And Super Spyware does also.
Yep.
And so does Avast, is what you're saying.
Avast, A-V-A-S-T, exclamation point, is an antivirus program.
Got it.
That you would use instead of, for example, McAfee or Symantec or one of those.
Okay, are all those that I mentioned, Avast, SpyBot, Adware, and Super Spyware, are they all compatible with the antivirus I'm running now? Because these are all spyware, I guess, so it should be fine with spyware.
No, Avast is an antivirus program. The other three will be usable with whatever antivirus you're running.
Yeah, I'm running Symantec antivirus.
Yep. Have you updated it recently?
Yeah.
More importantly, have you paid for it recently?
Yeah, I'm running NIS 2008.
All right, because if you don't pay for it, it'll say sometimes that it did update, but it doesn't.
Right, it updates the program, but you have to pay for the new antivirus definitions, which is the thing you really want anyway.
Right.
Right. No, it's on paid for, and NIS 2008 is running quicker, faster than 2007.
Yeah, they took out a lot of the crap that made it so slow.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have begun to look at other products at RIT as a whole. Instead of McAfee, because of version 8 just bogs the system down so badly.
Yeah, that one's a monster.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, and the other thing we've talked about in the past is that the virus writers don't release the virus until it gets past Norton and McAfee, because those are the two most well-known antivirus programs.
Right. It's another reason I'm running Avast.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, right, Bob.
Thank you.
Our next caller, Jim, also from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Quick, I just moved to Rochester, and I've been looking Thank you. And
why did you move here during the winter? never mind. Go ahead.
I was walking backwards. and I've looked at some of the wireless programs and basically Roadrunner and I think the telephone Frontier or whatever.
Right, various ways to get online, various broadband
Programs. Yeah, are there any other available in this area besides Roadrunner Wireless, et cetera? And I'm just looking at price-wise also and...
Well, if you want to do dial-up, there are some less expensive alternatives.
Yes.
And both Roadrunner and Frontier DSL have less expensive versions that run slower than the full speed. The full speed versions are $30 a month, but they all have discounts where if you sign up for 2 years in advance, you get it for lower. I think I just saw a billboard where Frontier is $25 a month for a year if you commit to a year. But they both have cheaper prices for lower speeds. There's also companies like Earthlink that will sell you DSL or cable by reselling you Frontier or Roadrunner. I always wondered how that worked. How can they be slower than Roadrunner when they're buying it from Roadrunner? Or not slow, but cheaper.
Cheaper. Right.
So it's those are the two main competitors. We're also starting to hear Clearwire.
A friend of mine bought a Clearwire system and loves it, but it isn't cheap.
Right. And it runs over your power lines, which is interesting.
No. Clearwire isn't the Sprint.
EVDO is Sprint and Verizon.
Yeah, EVDO network.
Yeah, that's $60 a month for cellular broadband. It uses the cell signals for high speed. It's not as fast as cable or DSL, but it's faster than dial-up.
And it's usable anywhere.
Right, usable anywhere you can get a cell signal.
Right.
So a lot of laptop users like that because they don't have to find a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Right. But, you know, there's Blue Frog for dial-up.
Yeah,
Who else
dial-up,
is available
nice.
For dial-up?
LocalNet.
LocalNet, absolutely.
NetAccess,
that's the name I couldn't think of. And John is a friend of mine, and I just couldn't think of the name NetAccess. John Warren.
Actually, I had a customer who, USA DataNet used to be a big ISP. They've shut down their ISP, had their dial-up service. They still offer high-speed, and moved everyone over to PeoplePC. And apparently it was such a huge influx to PeoplePC that they couldn't handle it, so now she moved to LocalNet. And had 18,000 email messages waiting in her USA DataNet mailbox.
Holy cow. And for dial-up, that's a lot.
Yeah, for 3 months. Yeah, I thought it had hung, and we just, you know, we went to dinner and came back, and then it started downloading 2 of 18,000, 3 of 18,000.
One of the things you might want to do is check out a local computer magazine called Computer Link. It's available free all over the place. You know, you find it in the magazine dumps outside of a lot of places. Computer
magazine
Link.
Bins.
Excuse me, bins outside of a lot of places. I beg your pardon.
And at techny.com.
Right, and they're at techny.com, and they've got, you know, lists of this and that. Among them would be, you'd find, for example, Blue Frog is one of their advertisers, things like that. So you'd find information about dial-up services as well as all the other stuff.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much.
Annoyingly, from what we hear from people in other cities, Rochester is much slower and much more expensive than virtually every other city in the country.
Yeah. Well, I'm just really, really upset about Fios.
Yeah, you can get it in Syracuse. What, 45 megabit for $20 a month? Some ridiculous.
Yeah. And Buffalo, same thing.
Yeah.
Fiber to your home, ludicrously cheap, ludicrously fast.
Yep.
We can't get it.
Frontier has a lock on the phone company, and
I'm beyond porked off. If there is a Verizon person listening,
we'd be more than
in
happy
Buffalo
to
or
test
Syracuse,
it for
we'd
you.
Be glad to test it in Rochester. If you want to run a line to my home, I can't begin to tell you how thrilled I would be to have that happen.
What's that lady in Norway, was it? Her son worked for the telco, and she's got 100 gigabit in her house?
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
I have several friends who work for the telephone company, and they have similar things in their home. Why not? They work for it. They install it. Why not have it? There's no problem.
Somebody has to test it.
Somebody's got to test it. Our next caller is John from Hilton, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
I run Windows XP, and I've got SpyBot, Adware, Norton Antivirus, and Norton Firewall. Last night, without us being on the computer, I got hit with a virus that Norton's calling Downloader. And within seconds, I had 6 different antivirus removers coming on the screen. I couldn't keep up with them.
That's interesting, because the Downloader antivirus came out in June of 2001. So if you're Norton was updated, it shouldn't have been able to get in.
Like it is updated. And I got 3 messages from that Norton, the big red high risk thing.
Yeah.
The first one said, detected and deleted automatically.
Good.
Then it came right back on. The second one said, unable to repair this file. And the third one came back on, said, access was denied.
And All right. You seriously need to dance the security tango at this point. Go to securitytango.com. Click on the Let's Dance button, print out that page, and follow it step by step. Do not skip any steps. That's why I call it a tango. If you skip a step, you're not doing a tango. You're just stumbling around. It will lead you through downloading some other software and then going into safe mode and doing a thorough cleanup. The problem could well be the thing we talked about before, is that we have heard many reports, a lot of the virus writers will not release a virus until it can get around the big 3, McAfee, Norton, and Trend Micro.
I tried SpyBot, and I pressed fix the problems. It came up with 15 problems. I did this twice. It wouldn't completely go across the screen. It would stop 3/4 of the way.
That's where safe mode might help you out. If you dance the security tango, go into safe mode without any processes running, that very well could take care of that problem with SpyBot.
Yeah, a lot of times the malware cannot be removed when you're running normally because they are running and won't let you delete themselves.
Right, and safe mode doesn't boot up anything but the least minimum amount of stuff it needs to run, which almost always does not include the virus.
Okay. I never heard of all these antiviruses, and I was chicken to use.
Well, most of them are fake. You're getting fake messages from fake antivirus programs scaring you. We call it scareware. They're scaring you into buying a fake program.
Yeah, they all wanted it not to be free.
Yep.
Right. They want you to buy it, take your money.
Don't do anything. Don't use anything you can't get off my list right in the center of the page in the Security Tango.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Have fun. Good luck. I've said before, we're working on, now it's in the Soundbites forum, we're all working on a way to make a bootable disc that'll clean off all that
stuff.
That'll
be cool.
Yeah, we'll be. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jess Walker, me, Nick Francesco, Jess Sawyer. Who's Jess Walker? I don't have any idea who Jess Walker is. You'll be Jess Sawyer for the remainder of the day. She's ably sitting in for Rob Linton and doing a phenomenal job. And I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, only and always on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jess Sawyer.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. The FBI is warning about the rise in phone-based phishing attacks. With consumers finally getting wise to phishing attacks, scammers are hitting the phones. U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation's Internet Crime Complaint Center, IC3, warned Thursday that so-called phishing attacks are on the rise. So are the proliferation of stupid names. These are scams where criminals send an email or text message to a victim saying there's been a security problem. The victim needs to call his or her bank to reactivate a credit or debit card. Upon calling the phone number, the recipient is greeted with "Welcome to the Bank of," then is requested to enter their card number in order to resolve a pending security issue. Obviously, like the websites that you get directed to, this is a complete scam, and you should never do it. Let me repeat that. If you get a message on your cell phone that says, call this number and enter your credit card number, do not do it.
There's been a scam going around Ontario County, and the Ontario County Sheriff has been warning about it. The jury duty scam. You get a phone call saying that you missed jury duty and you're going to go to jail. So give us all your personal information and we'll see what we can do to get you rescheduled. And people do because, you know, scared. And so the sheriff is quick to point out that jury summons come through the mail.
Yeah.
And delinquent notices come through the postal mail.
Yeah, right.
Not email, not phone calls.
And generally speaking, if you genuinely missed a notice, nobody sends you to jail. They just give you a verbal notification that you will appear next week.
Yeah.
I had a friend who did that. She couldn't go. I mean, her job was sending her overseas. And she said, I can't because I'm doing this. They said, well, you'll have to appear in the next one. She said, no, I'm going overseas. And they said, okay, when are you coming back? You'll appear in that one. Yep. And she told them, and she did.
My mom, for 30 years, lived in town before they moved to Florida, never got called for jury duty. The week before they move, she gets called.
Yeah, right.
And she wanted to do it.
Right. I've been both on a regular jury and on a grand jury. Grand juries are fun. They're just fun. All right, our next caller is Tom from Naples, New York. Welcome, Tom. How are things in Naples?
About 16 degrees.
Having a heat wave.
You know, it's winter.
Yeah, summer's almost over. Get used to it.
I don't know. I didn't get to the first part of the program, but SpyBot has got a new issue.
Yeah.
New download.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe locks out. It scans as you're going, and it has blocked like 5,800 different.
Yeah, it's a good version.
It seems to be.
Yeah.
My problem is computer security. I got three computers, and I can't even get them to connect to the web right now. And
that's very secure.
And well, the problem is I don't have control.
Yeah, right.
And the other day when I went to shut it down, I got the message, and this is the third time I've got it. Other people are logged onto this computer. Shutting down Windows may cause them to lose data. You wish to continue. Now,
have you created other usernames on this computer?
No.
Someone has owned your computer and they've made their own username and they're doing what they want with it.
Yeah, I would suggest you definitely get the Security Tango, even if you have to go to a friend's machine, download it and burn it to CD, and then go back to your machine, boot into safe mode,
and run all of those applications.
And you may want to first start by going to your users control panel and deleting those other users.
Well, that's just it. There aren't any.
Do you have guest users. Active?
No. I've got Adware, SpyBot, SpySweeper, Super Anti, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I run Zone Alarm Internet Security Suite.
Yeah. Let me suggest that you dance the tango fully.
You know, I do it over and over again, and that's what I got after doing it. And, I'm on Workman's Comp, and I got to tell you, these people, they wish they could put a camera in my house. So if they can't, they want to get into my computer to see what I'm doing. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah.
Generally, that message you get if you're doing a home network or something and somebody's sharing files, and if you're not doing that, that's got to be somebody trying to get access to your computer and good firewall, lock down your firewall real good.
The other thing you can do is to bring your machine to one of these two guys and have them do the checks.
First time it happened, I was using Juno, and it happened on dial-up.
Yeah. Well, let me suggest that you bring your computer to someone, because they'll do essentially what we're hoping the new version of the Security Tango CD will do, which is they'll take the drive right out of your machine and run it as a second drive on another machine, so nothing in that machine is booting, right, and they can check everything without any viruses trying to stop them.
The second time I got it was I had one of the big box stores. I bought a new Toshiba, and I had them set up on wireless.
Yep.
I mean, I had a professional set it up, and I had it on for a couple of days and wasn't really paying attention. I went to shut it down, and I got the same message.
Well, again, especially with a wireless network, someone outside your house can be attacking in your computer.
Right. Yep. Again, I'm afraid that you're going to have to bring all your machines down, because if you clean it off of one and hook it back up to the network, it's going to reinfect the others again.
I don't use a network. I use them one at a time.
Well, whatever. You're still going to need to get all three of them cleaned.
And after I got that message with the wireless, I didn't have a wireless, and I went to the Ethernet cable. It's about 20 feet long, and Steve is 100% right about the guy that designed that plug.
Yeah, the clip just breaks off.
The guy must own a company that makes them.
Yeah, well, clearly he did, yes.
Because those things are useless.
All right, Tom, honest.
You can get snagless ones, but they cost a little more.
Yeah, they do. Honest, yeah. we gotta run.
Thanks. Great show, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, and you got to definitely bring your machines down to be fixed, because error message is coming from anything legitimate, you're going to need to get them cleaned now and immediately.
I've been to Dave before.
Okay, good.
We'll go again.
Excellent.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, bye-bye. We're going to take another break. We've got some folks on the line. We don't have you on the line. We need you on the line. Give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jess Sawyer. Jess Walker has left. Jess Sawyer is in to take her place. Me, Nick Francesco, and all of you, don't forget to join us in the forums. Don't forget to join us in the IRC chat room. Both are available off the main page. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show. You can at least get started and enjoy yourself. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 49 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jess Sawyer.
And 53 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. You know, Nick, this week, no fewer than three incidents came to light where lost laptops exposed customer data. First, the theft of a laptop containing social security numbers of Nashville, Tennessee area voters is expected to cost local officials about $1.5 million. The names and social security numbers of all 337,000 registered voters in the county. And what they're doing for them is, they're giving them a year of free identity theft protection, which is nice. Secondly, a backup tape containing credit card information from hundreds of U.S. retailers is missing. GE Money, which manages in-store credit card programs for the majority of U.S. retailers, first realized the tape was missing from an Iron Mountain Secure Storage facility in October. The tape contained in-store credit card information on 650,000 retail customers. The missing backup tape was unencrypted, which I believe should be criminally
negligent,
which should be penalized by incarceration mandatory. Wow. That's horrible. The tape also contained the social security numbers of 150,000 customers. Third, a laptop containing personal information on about 600,000 people was stolen from an officer in the Royal Navy on Friday. The laptop also contained bank details on at least 3,500 people. The Ministry of Defense decided to go public with the loss after media reports surfaced on it about Friday. So these people, I mean, these people, this was back in October. And they don't announce it until today because they finally got caught. All those people swinging in the breeze. Man, I really hate everybody. If you're going to do backups, encrypt it. If you're going to have personal data on a laptop, encrypt the partition that it's on. How hard is that? Apparently impossible for people in the government and in banking. All right, our next caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hello?
Bill.
Great show.
Thank you.
I'm running an XP 2.6 with 3 gig. I run the Tango religiously weekly. Two things happened that I use all the time is my desktop, my document shortcut, and the speaker that's down in the taskbar. And so my document is up there. I click it left and right, but nothing works. And I've gone to the control panel, and when I go to set it up, it's, I get a window that says you don't have the driver for that. And the same thing on the speaker. So I'm not sure what I should do.
There's probably another program on your computer running that would be either blocking that or causing those error messages.
I just downloaded, got into Pandora. I don't know if that was tied to it. Pandora radio?
Yeah. And make sure that's shut down. Not only runs, but it also leaves something in your tray.
Okay. I just restarted and whatnot, so it shouldn't have been running.
No, it shouldn't have been, but check to make sure there's nothing running in
okay.
the system tray.
Gotcha.
And make sure nothing's running in the back.
Okay.
If your speaker disappeared, that's usually an indication that your sound drivers are either corrupt or non-existent on your computer.
And Pandora might have done that, too.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yep. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of times you see media programs will muck about with your media settings, your speaker settings, your audio card, trying to get the best performance out of it. Games can do that, too.
Okay.
A lot of times what we've seen work is if you go into your device manager, remove your sound card, reboot, and let Windows redetect it, that may work to get the sound to work again.
Yeah. Before you do that, check through all the CDs you got with your computer, and if there is one with drivers on it, make sure that's handy. If Windows can't find a compatible driver in its own database,
okay.
It'll ask you for a CD.
C Media Wave device, I guess is what it's called.
There you go.
Great.
Yeah, a lot of times there may be several lines for your sound card, the card itself, and then there might be a wave device and a microphone device and a speaker device.
Right. Mm-hmm. Alternately, uninstalling Pandora may bring all those things back.
Okay, good. One other thing.
No more other things. We're done.
Fair enough, guys.
Sorry.
Great show.
I apologize.
Great show.
Thank you very much. It's Time gets away from us. It does. This show is too short at a mere 2 hours. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I especially want to thank both Dan Deary, who is sitting in for Dave Enright, one step ahead of the law in the Mideast. And, of course, the great Jessica Walker-Sawyer, who is doing a phenomenal job in place of the missing Rob Linton, who's either off on a cruise in the Caribbean or is hanging with Dave somewhere on an island in the Caribbean. I'm not sure exactly what's happening. I want to thank Dan Deary, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, ably doing all the recording for this show week after week. Of course, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. See you next week, 59 minutes after the hour, Soundbites.